Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. If you've ever taken a drive south along I-94, you might remember seeing a road sign in Sturtevant near Racine advertising the University of Lausonomy. Or you might have seen the painted sign on a barn that says, Study Natural Law.
Lausonomy was a utopian movement that began in 1929, created by Alfred Lawson, a British immigrant who, before he started Lausonomy, founded two Wisconsin airplane manufacturers and is credited as the inventor of the first passenger airliner.
But Lawson also had ideas about things other than aviation. Lausonomy advocated for vegetarianism, its own brand of physics, and economic reform. During the Great Depression, it had thousands of followers. Its popularity diminished after World War II, though, as the economy recovered. In 1943, Lawson started a university in Des Moines and adapted his message to include science and religion. The school officially closed 9 years later, but there were still adherents to the philosophy, including the late Merle Haden, the man behind the Sturtevant sign.
Milwaukee filmmaker Ryan Sarnowski and West Allis resident and film instructor Susan Kearns have brought Lausonomy's and Haden's stories to the screen in a new documentary. Man Life tells the story of Alfred Lawson's attempts to make history and Haden's unrelenting quest to better humanity through Lausonomy.
Sarnowski explains to Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski how Lausonomy first caught his attention.
I happened to get pulled over by the Racine Highway Patrol in front of the Lausonomy farm right there in Sturtevant, just outside of Racine, and even though I'd driven by the farm countless times on my way to Chicago or back, I think it was having to pause and really start to contemplate what that place was, who would be living out there, that really piqued my curiosity and led me on a pursuit to find those answers, and that led us to Merle Haden.
So what was that process? Did you just walk up to the farm one day and see if anyone was there? Or
yeah, I took the service road down, pulled in. There's a little house at the front that most people will probably remember because it had the words Study Natural Law painted on the roof of the house. And knocked on the door, got no answer, kind of wandered around, peeked around. Finally, I just left a note in the door that said, what's Lausonomy? How can I find out more? And I gave my phone number. And a few weeks later, I got a phone call. And then by that point, I had forgotten that I even was curious. Some other life crisis probably had diverted my attention. And so someone called and said, I live on this land. The land is no longer connected with Lausonomy. Someone else owns it. They just rent it to me in this house. The guy you want to talk to is Merle Haden. He gave me Merle's number. He didn't inform me, or he didn't know that Merle wintered in Florida. And this must have been early spring 2009, I think. And so I left a message on Merle's machine, and I don't think Merle knew how to check his messages from Florida. So another month or so passed by before I finally got a call from Merle, this old voice just saying, so you want to know more about Lausonomy? And I said, I do, I guess, I forgot. And he invited me down to his apartment in Racine, and our other producer, Terry Cadell, drove down with me, and we didn't go with camera, we didn't go with any recording device, we just went to listen. Merle sat us down in two chairs in this tiny, cramped apartment, and first thing he said is, what do you know about American history? And we looked at each other and just said, probably not enough. And for 4 hours, Merle lectured us on an alternative view of American history that was really kind of led by Alfred Lawson's fight to save America from financial corruption, and how America could probably solve more of its problems also through the philosophical teachings of Lausonomy. The whole time we sat there, Merle's sweetheart Betty was knitting away in the corner, rolling her eyes as if she had heard it all before, and Terry and I left four and a half hours later and just looked at each other and said, we probably should get a camera. I think we have a story.
Absolutely. And many people in Wisconsin, you know, on the drive have probably recognized that sign and the farm. And even if they're wandering on in Mitchell Airport, can probably remember or at least recall, you know, Lawson Airlines. So, Susan, can you go into a bit of the history of Lausonomy? You know, who founded it and what are its basic principles?
So Alfred Lawson, who invented the first passenger airliner in the United States, his company went bankrupt during the Great Depression. And during that time, he was sort of dismayed by how the economic policies were working for the people while he saw his company crumbling. And so he started the Direct Credit Society. And that society was really interested in abolishing interest. That was sort of their kind of the main platform that they got the attention of lots of people, primarily in the Midwest, but really throughout the country. But then after the Great Depression, obviously, people started going back to work and were, you know, sort of less inclined to have parades for economic reform, things like that. And so at that point, he moved into more sort of spiritual aspects of thinking about sort of the way that everything relates to each other. Lots of his theories tie to other sort of religious philosophies, but he had sort of unusual language that he would talk about maneuverability and penetrability and our bodies being comprised of like menorgs and disorgs, which are, you know, sort of positive mental organisms and disturbance organisms, and how those things sort of play out in our own bodies and in our own actions based on what our bodies are doing. So he started the University of Lausanne as a way to essentially form a commune around his ideas and his publications. And the school, the University of Lausanne, was originally in Des Moines, Iowa. The students who went there would really study his books, and they were trying to really form a community of people who was pulling away from capitalism. So the elements of direct credits were still embedded in their philosophies.
Yeah, I was really surprised to learn about the following, especially that it gained such prominence in the 30s and 40s during the Great Depression, not that it was just in Wisconsin, but across the United States. But Merle Haden, you know, decided right when he was 18, this is my life, this is what I'm devoted to, this is the message I'm going to spread. And he was one of the last devoted followers and spokesperson for Lausanne. And he's collected so much stuff. You brought some of the pamphlets with you today. But how are you feeling as you discovered all that he's done to preserve this way of life?
Overwhelmed. I think as a filmmaker, the hardest challenge was to find out that Merle had this collection of information, not just text, but also just visual information. There was too much for us to not just go through, even. You know, we didn't have the resources or the means to like hire a team of people to just sort through all the archival material. We had to do it kind of ourselves, core group of us, like less than a dozen. And we had to figure out what was going to be able to be used to tell the story in the most coherent fashion and the most engaging fashion. And it made for a lot of hard choices. It was like finding needles in haystacks. We would constantly open up a new box or dig through a new bin in one of those barns and find some new treasure trove of information. And then I have to kind of rethink how it fits into the film.
Through this process and through talking with Merle, did you ever find anyone else who has remained devoted to Lausanne, or at least had their material from when they were following? Or
yeah, there are still Lausannians out there, and we've heard more from them actually since the film has been out there. So they are still, you know, reading Lawson's books and trying to follow his doctrines and things like that. The reason that we felt comfortable sort of talking about Merle as like the last crusader was because he really has carried the torch of this organization. Like he, you know, was going to the EAA air show, Air Venture, every year to set up this booth and like try to get people who've never heard of this, like, you know, get books in their hands and get them excited about learning more. And so from our perspective, Merle was really the last person who was really devoting his life to actively trying to involve new people in this organization. But one of the interesting things is that as we did a Kickstarter campaign years ago, and even doing that, people started reaching out to us saying, you know, my grandparents were part of this, or, you know, I spent a couple weeks on that farm one summer. And people have really fond memories of being around this organization because it was such a loving environment. And so that's been really kind of neat to connect with those memories, too, even though, you know, we had to limit the scope of our film. And so those voices don't show up in it.
With these additional voices and people coming out of the woodwork, so to speak, do you find it surprising that Merle was one of the last really gusto people to preach about Lausanne when it seemed in its prime it was such a tight-knit community that, you know, they wouldn't perhaps have let it falter?
Part of it, I think, is that people get jobs and have families and get busy. And Merle, as you said, like made that decision to devote his life to this early. And so, and Merle was, you know, not just devoted, but stubborn. And so there, you know, he wasn't going to change his mind about that. So I think that's part of why he could continue to really like do this kind of work in a way that some of the people who were younger and went on to have families and run businesses and things like that didn't quite have that same kind of the resource of time to devote to it.
And documentaries in particular, time is a huge aspect of them. You've both spent 8 years chronicling Merle and Lasonomy and all the work and research that goes into this film. And I'm curious, did anything remain a mystery to you while you were going through this? And what about Merle did you most admire by the end of this experience?
I think things are still a mystery about a lot of aspects of Lasonomy and Lawson and what drove Lawson to do what he did and think the way he did. I mean, I'm still, you know, to a degree uncertain of like how the Direct Credit Society would have worked if it had actually ever been implemented. And, you know, there's certainly things about his scientific principles that could probably undergo some more, you know, scrutiny or thought or that. And there's aspects of information that we're still looking for. You know, there's supposedly a recording of Lawson's voice. We figure if anyone had it, it would be Merle, and we have not found it. So, yeah, there's always going to be something else out there to uncover. And there may be, you know, some other people who have parts of collections that have those things. As for Merle, for me personally, what interests me about Merle is just his dedication to it. I think it's hard for us to find anyone in this day and age who is that dedicated to something for that long in their life. We all go through a lot of phases. We're into one thing or another. But to come back with such unwavering passion for one belief, I think it's hard, especially when that belief kind of flies in the face of what so much of the rest of the world tells you to think or feel. And, you know, he definitely never faltered or never wavered. In a ways, it's stubborn. There's a negative to that. But in a ways, sometimes it's admirable to have such a dedicated belief.
I agree with all those things, but I also really admire Merle's ability to live in the United States and just not subscribe to capitalism. You know, just thinking about how many decisions are made based on money in this society and how many kind of terrible things happen in this society because somebody's trying to make a buck. And Merle and I think the other Lawsonians just are not interested in that as like money is not the driving force in their life. They're really making choices, thinking about what choice am I making now that's going to improve life for people later. And so it's always sort of this constant state of trying to give back or, you know, not thinking about the superficial elements of so much of what capitalist society is kind of based on, I guess, and really like making do with what you have and understanding how to utilize everything that you have to sort of the best of its ability, whether it's like a rubber band or a cardboard box or, you know, like thinking about Merle's collection of, you know, we would find boxes of like old keys and gears and things like that. And he would just save them in case he needed that thing for a purpose. And I find that really, I think that would be incredibly challenging to live that way. And I find that very admirable.
Yeah, I think I agree with Susan on all those things about the way Merle lives. And I think that's something we both were really kind of awestruck by is, you know, he'll tell you that he comes from a generation that is completely different than any other and probably will never be repeated again. And that might be being born out of, you know, or during the Great Depression and coming up during that time. But he's resourceful. I mean, we watched him fix things, repair things, hold on to things in a way that, you know, the same nuts and bolts that were used to hold together that air show booth. And that booth itself, you know, it was partly a 1950s reclaimed candy store counter, some boards they pulled out of the trash and repainted. You know, he's extremely good at making do with what he has and perhaps even improving it or building upon it. And, you know, he was doing that up till the very end.
Yeah.
Do you think he ever felt like he did enough in his lifetime in the dock? You know, he stated he wants to cross the finish line running. And for him, it was always a constant, like, need to make things better for future generations. It was always about thinking forward and keeping that momentum going. And, you know, it is amazing how tireless he was from age 18 to 96. So, I mean, this documentary is going to help continue that message. But did you get the sense that he was never satisfied?
I think so. I mean, I think he felt like he did what he could, and that was as satisfying as it could be to him. I think that he continued to see things play out in American politics and American history, and that was very frustrating to him because he could see the cycles and the patterns. And I do think that he, I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but I do think that he sort of felt like we're farther away from it now than maybe we used to be.
Yeah, I think that it can be like something that, you know, could grind you down and make you want to stop, but he didn't want to stop. I mean, up until even this year, he was talking about going to another EAA. You know, there was no doubt ever that he was going to find a way to get back to the AirVenture Air Show, set up that booth, and hopefully find another good one, as he put it. I mean, he went everywhere with a book, some of the newsletters, if he was going to get coffee, go get his car fixed. Even when he would, you know, have to go to the hospital for some reason or something, he would find a nurse and start talking their ear off. And then we would visit him and he would tell us he found another good one. So, no, he was never not going to cross the finish line running.
How would you like the film to impact people, but also Wisconsinites? This is kind of a big chunk of our history that I feel like not many people are familiar with.
Yeah, I think that was part of our excitement for this journey, was to uncover some of this history. And many Lawsonians have been, they were pretty secretive because they haven't, like Alfred Lawson hasn't necessarily been treated well in, you know, in some of the writing, or there was some investigative reporting stuff that was done that didn't sit well with them. So they've rightly been hesitant to sort of let some of this information out there. And that's part of why this documentary took so long, because Merle certainly changed throughout the process, became more open with stories and artifacts and things like that. So I do think that just giving people access to some of this information is really exciting.
Yeah, I want people to get curious about not just Lawsonomy, but about the world in general. I think there's an actual push against curiosity here in America lately. And I want people to kind of get back to being inquisitive about things. We'd all pass that sign, or a lot of people would pass that sign, but few people would stop and find out what it's about.
Milwaukee filmmaker Ryan Sarnowski is the director, and West Allis film instructor Susan Kearns is the producer of the documentary Man Life. The film's also the subject of an article by our film contributor, Dwayne Dudek, appearing in next month's Milwaukee Magazine.
The documentary's subject, Merle Haden, passed away in June at the age of 96. He'll be celebrated on July 24th with a screening of Man Life at the EAA Air Show in Oshkosh. There's more information at WUWM.com.